The following is a special presentation of Belfast Community Radio. On Monday, September 30th, 2024, a forum was held at the Boathouse for candidates for the Belfast City Council. The following is a recording of the first hour of that event.
Hello, I'm Petra Hall from WBFY Belfast Community Radio, and I'd like to welcome you to the 2024 Belfast City Council Candidates Forum. Thank you all for coming to the Boathouse for this event, which is being recorded by WBFY, Belfast Community Radio, and BCTV, Belfast Community Television. This forum will be broadcast on both BCTV and WBFY several times before the November 5th election, and it also will be available online, as we are hoping to share this forum with as many other citizens of Belfast, so please do spread the word. Also, keep in mind that no matter what ward you may live in, we vote for council candidates for all wards. I'd like to introduce our moderator for tonight. She is Michaela Schweitzer-Bloom, and she is the executive director of the nonprofit, nonpartisan Maine Center for Public Interest Reporting, which publishes the Maine Monitor. We're very grateful to you, Michaela, for taking on this important task, and I'd like to turn the mic over to you so we can begin. Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. What a fantastic turnout for this 2024 Belfast Candidate Forum. I want to thank Petra and WBFY for inviting me to moderate this evening's program. We'll start out with some short introductions that I will make of the candidates, and then we'll invite each of the candidates to make a two-minute introductory statement. We'll then go into question and answer. The candidates will have 2 minutes to answer their questions. At the end, they'll have the opportunity for a two-minute closing statement before we wrap up. So let's go ahead and get started. Tonight we have, in Ward 1, Mary Mortier, the current city councilor, is being challenged by Christopher Hike. Christopher Hike is a conservationist. He moved to Belfast 28 years ago with his wife, Diana. Christopher has served on the RSU 71 school board and is a member of the Friends of the Harriet Hartley Conservation Area. Mary Mortier was first elected to the Belfast City Council in 2012 and is completing her sixth term. A real estate agent, Mary is active in community affairs and volunteering and has been a full-time Belfast resident since 1996. To represent Ward 2, we have Joanna Peterson challenging current Ward 2 City Councilor Neil Harkness. Neil has lived in Belfast since 2005. He was elected to the City Council in 2014. He has been a member of the Belfast Maskers, a broadcaster on WERU, an instructor at the Senior College, and works as a driver for Midcoast Transportation. Joanna Peterson is not participating this evening and did not provide biographic information. In the race for Ward 5, we have David August challenging incumbent Paul Dean. David August has lived in Belfast for the last 14 years. He is an independent HVAC and carpentry contractor, and until the end of 2023, owned a property management business with his wife, Sarah. David serves on the board of directors for the Springbrook Condominiums. David and Sarah have a son who is currently a kindergartner at East Belfast Elementary. Paul Dean has served as the Belfast Ward 5 City Councilor since 2018. Born and raised in Belfast, Paul has served as the chair of the Comprehensive Plan Committee and spent years working at the paper mill in Bucksport. I will now invite each candidate to provide an introductory statement, each no more than 2 minutes. We'll go in alphabetical order. So, Mr. August, I will invite you to kick things off.
Shona, thank you for hosting this. Really appreciate that, and everybody volunteering to put this together. I'm asking for your vote, and the reason I'm doing that is because I've really three things that have come up that have really, you know, pushed me to run, and it's mainly our housing, our zoning, and tax fairness are my three big things. So housing, I feel like we have very outdated regulations that make it very difficult to build the things that we need to do. I'm a small business owner, but I'm also a rental property owner. And it's very difficult for people to build things in Belfast because we have a lot of what they call technical standards that a lot of towns around here don't have. These are things that we impose on ourselves. These are not state mandates. And what they end up doing is they take small developers like me, and we look at them, and we end up just, you know, changing our minds or not doing, you know, the type of housing that we need. And I'd like to, you know, start working on that. Tax fairness is something that I feel strongly about. I feel like we're taxing people at the low end of the housing scale, people with modest homes. I think we're taxing them way too much, and I think we're asking them to subsidize very expensive homes, and I don't feel that that's sustainable, and I don't feel that it's just or right. And then on zoning reform, we have 25 zoning districts, and I feel like that's a little too much for a 7,000-person town. It's very hard to know what you can or cannot do. We also have, you know, large staffing in order to manage all this zoning. I'd like to start going through that and start, you know, paring down things that are just not working for us, things that haven't worked for the last 30 plus years. And I think we can do better on that. So those are really my three things that I'm looking to improve. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. August. Mr. Dean, I'll turn it over to you.
Okay. First, I'd like to thank everyone for coming to tonight's candidates forum. It's very important to get to know who's running. The mill rate in 2018, when I was elected to office, was 22.7. And within the last month, we've just had a mill rate of 15.4. And I'm fortunate to be working on a council that's fiscally conservative. And we've just gone through a reval, and I understand property values have gone up. And a lot of that is directly the way the state of Maine figures this out. And it makes it difficult to hold the line. We all have come to enjoy the community we live in, and it's had to make cuts and not have the things that we've had in the past. But we're very careful with how we spend your money. And I feel that there are some things that we can do with our assessing of properties to help make it a more fair and equitable way of doing it. I don't like paying taxes any better than the next person, but I'd like to have it be fair spread between all of us, so we all pay our fair share. That's the main thing. In closing, I'd want to say that affordable housing has been a big interest in the city council. And during my tenure as, you know, a councilor, we have created 97 units for people to move into. And what that does is open up the market for people to move in those long-term rentals once these people move in. So thank you very much for listening tonight. Look forward to the questions from the audience. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harkness. Oh, Mr. Dean, I apologize. Getting ahead of myself there. Thank you, Mr. Dean. Mr. Harkness, I'll let you go ahead.
Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody, came out tonight. And thank you, again, as the others said, to the volunteers who helped put this together, and to Ned and the BCTV people. And especially, I want to thank the radio station. When I was first elected to council, we had the permits for a station, but no one had done anything, and they were set to expire very soon. And so I made that one of my first priorities on council, was to try to put together a group of people and see if we could actually do a radio station. And we called, Joe Slocum and I called a meeting at the Abbott Room, and five people showed up. And we thought, well, at least it's a start. And we called a second meeting, and five completely different people showed up. And we kept at it. And I'm proud to say that Rhonda and Petra were among those initial pioneers who got it going. So I'm really pleased almost 10 years later to see that it's a growing and thriving institution now in the city of Belfast. So I'm particularly proud to have them here tonight. I just want to say it seems like in our country, elections have been something that are divisive and full of conflict and heat and not light. But I think what we have here tonight is we have five people on the stage who all care very much about this community, who are smart, and I'm interested in hearing from them. Mr. August earlier talked about he has ideas about how to improve things in the city, and whoever wins the election, I'd love to hear his ideas and from anyone else as well. So thanks to everybody for participating, the fellow candidates as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harkness. Mr. Hike, I invite you to make your opening statement.
Thank you all for coming. It's wonderful to see you. And we live in paradise, and it's been particularly perfect today. I think we're all very grateful for what a wonderful city this is. I'm listening to Mr. Dean with the statistics on the mill rate, and if you're paying 21%, 21 mills on a $100,000 house, paying 15 mills on a $400,000 house may come into the reevaluation problem. At this point, I'm running because of the Nordic Aqua Farm and the money that's being squandered, keeping them at bay by this city for paying for really bad legal advice. So if I'm elected, I will try and make sure that the Nordic Aqua Farm problem is settled as rapidly as possible so that we can save some money and put it towards better schools and hopefully better administration. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hike. Ms. Mortier, would you like to make your opening statement?
Yes. Thank you all for being here. Democracy at work is always a pleasure to see and feel. I just want to state right off the bat that I have recently fractured a bone in my leg, and I'm on serious pain meds. So, thank you. So I'm on serious pain meds. I'm not sure how this is going to go, but it was really important for me to be here. So thank you all for being here as well. My husband and I first found Belfast in 1984. And we didn't fall in love that first summer, but we came back for a number of years and made an investment in our first property here in 1989, and it was going to be our retirement dream. That property burned in 1992, major fire. And we were fortunate enough to have insurance that we could rebuild it. And during that year, I commuted here that the house was being rebuilt, and I got to meet so many people in the community. And it fast-forwarded our retirement plan. It did take us another 6 years for one of us to find a job here, however. And so we've lived here full-time since 1996. And while we were in the between 1989 and 1996, there were 2 to 3 newspapers, depending on where it was in time. And I subscribed to them. We lived in Brooklyn, New York at the time. And I'm running out of time, and got to learn about the community even through reading the newspapers front to back. I have to stop there, it looks like. We'll continue this through the evening. Thank you. 18 seconds. So I first ran because of taxes. I'm very fiscally conservative, and I'm a budget hawk. And I'm sure there are going to be questions, and I'm going to go further into that as we go through the evening. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Okay, so I think we'll go ahead and jump right into the questions. There's a lot, which is great. Thank you. Keep them coming. There's a couple of folks around the room that are collecting questions, so feel free to pass those along. A couple of you raised housing, and recently at the Common Ground Fair, the Maine Monitor invited attendees to tell us what they thought was the most pressing issue facing Maine. The number one issue by far was housing, regardless of where you lived. And a couple of you have already mentioned it. We also have a question here about it. So I wonder if each of you could go into a little bit more depth about what you think or how you think the City Council can engage on addressing the issue of housing in Belfast, the need for more housing, particularly affordable housing in Belfast. And I will go ahead and invite Mr. August to answer the question first.
Okay. There's probably a lot to unpack in 2 minutes about housing, but So to start with an anecdote, I recently built a workshop at my house, and I have a small business there. When I went to go build that workshop, I was thinking about putting an apartment upstairs for the income. Went down to City Hall, found out that, well, you can put an apartment in, but you can't because you have to have you have to share the same driveway for the apartment dwellers as your main house does. So, well, this apartment's going in my backyard, and I live on an intersection, so it would have a separate driveway because otherwise the driveway would have to go through my house. Well, that's what the standards say. So I just said, okay, well, that's what the standards say, so I guess I'm not going to put an apartment up there. I'll put storage up there. So that's what I mean when we have technical standards that make no sense. I mean, something like that, it serves no purpose other than just to say on paper, yes, we can build more housing, but in practice, we're going to make it difficult for you. And that's just one example. And the more you talk to people around town, you get more and more about, you know, you get into in-town issues with nonconformities, houses that were built before zoning standards even existed that were fine, that now we're telling them that basically your house is functionally illegal today, but we have a process for that, and it's just the planning board, and it's just, you know, a few thousand dollars to add a deck, add an addition, things like that, add an apartment. So that's the kind of stuff I really want to start with, because that's the low-hanging fruit, the things that you can change instantly, and I think we really need to start looking through the zoning code and start asking, you know, do these restrictions make sense, and, you know, who are they serving? And if we start, you know, easing back on some of those, will we start seeing more apartments? I'd much rather see 50 to 100 apartments added in duplexes, triple families, ADUs. I'd rather see those than see, you know, big developers coming in building subsidized housing. That's my preference. So,
thank you, Mr. August. Mr. Dean, would you like to comment on the question?
I would. A couple of years before I became a counselor, I started going into the planning department. And I was talking about my neighbor's garage. It's a beautiful building. They didn't use it as a garage. It was empty. It was 5-10 years old. But there ought to be a way to use it to help the family out. So I went through this with them several times. And they thought I was talking about, you know, developing it, splitting it out from the original property, and I wasn't. I wanted them to be able to build an apartment. They had four daughters, and it would be a way for them to, if they were renting it to somebody, to make a little money for the family, maybe put some towards taxes or help the family unit. And they ended up calling it accessory. And just before I became a counselor, they voted it in. And then they turned around and add during the writing of ordinances of flex housing. Now the state has basically taken that idea and asked all the towns and cities to start implementing things like that, to be able to use the buildings that we have available. Look at how much it costs to build a building. Why not use what we have already? Why not use what we're being taxed for already? It was just a way to give someone a chance to make a little extra money if they took the time to do it. And those are the things I've been working on and trying to create. And I will continue to do that. My next project that I'm planning on is working with the assessing department to do a better job assessing city lots so that we all are taxed evenly. So that's what I'm up to. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dean. Mr. Harkness, would you like to comment?
Thank you. 2014, I ran for city council on two issues. One was reforming the general assistance department, which was a great success, and the other was affordable housing, which has been a struggle every day since. And over the time I've been on the council, and starting before that, the planning department has worked on ordinances the entire time. We've made a lot of changes. We lowered the minimum size. We made it easier. We took away a lot of, I'm sorry that Mr. August had a problem, but we did remove a lot of the barriers that stood in the way of people adding accessory dwelling units. One example that came up is if Paul has a shed and I build an addition on my backyard, and they're exactly the same as far as a new dwelling unit, because his is in a shed and mine's in an addition on the house, he has to put in a separate sewer line. That was one of the rules we got rid of. There were all kinds of things like that. And they're all useful and they're all worth talking about. And if we can find more and more of those kinds of things to eliminate, that's all great. But that's not going to come close to solving the problem. And I think everyone would rather see more duplexes, more, multi-unit, small apartments in town, perhaps. You also get into the issue of nobody wants sprawl, nobody wants density. So it becomes a real problem just finding locations. I do want to say that there is some hope on the horizon. Both the PCHC development in the former Bank of America building and eventually the Waldo Cap development across the street and the lot behind Tractor Supply, both of them in their planning are at some point going to include building a fairly large amount of more affordable housing units. That's down the road, and hopefully that comes to pass.
Thank you, Mr. Harkness. Mr. Hike, would you like to comment on the question of housing and affordable housing in Belfast?
33 years ago, I tried to find an apartment in Belfast when I decided to move to Maine, and it was impossible. I ended up renting in a basement for 5 years in Lincolnville Beach. It was delightful. The people were delightful, and I was blessed. Then I bought a house in Belfast, and with the per capita income here at $41,500 and the average rent being $1,600, it's a tough slog. I think the elephant in the room is Airbnb. People are making usurious sums by renting out rooms and wings of their houses, whatever, and it's taking what could be used for apartments into virtual hotels or inns. And I think the problem has to be addressed by the council at some point. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Mortier, would you like to comment?
So affordable housing in general, are not just an issue in Belfast. This is an all-encompassing issue across the state of Maine and across the country. There have been a number of changes, and I'm going to recognize a former long-term counselor, Mike Hurley, who made it a mission a number of years ago to really push forcefully housing in Belfast, and he did a good job of bringing that to the forefront in the community, because not everybody is out there trying to rent an apartment. Not everybody was aware of what was going on and how difficult it was. There have been a number of changes that have been made since 2014 in particular to the ability through planning and codes to expand uses within the community, whether outside the bypass or inside the bypass. And one that really stands out was one of the early ones was that the size of a lot could be reduced. If you were on sewer, the minimum size of a lot could be reduced to 7,500 square feet. And if you were not on sewer, it could be reduced to 20,000 square feet. That opened up a lot of opportunity within the broader community for building where it had not been allowed prior. It was a beginning step, but one that's important, and we're seeing results today.
Great, thank you very much. An issue that has been dominating many conversations and news reports about Belfast this summer is the decision by the Waldo County General Hospital to close its birthing unit. Can you each comment on how you believe this decision could impact people in Belfast and what you, as a council member, might do to engage on this issue? Mr. August, we'll start with you.
I'll say I'm a stubborn and I'm a frugal New Englander, and when it comes to large institutions, I'm usually a little distrustful. So I have to back up a little bit. When Maine Health, when Waldo County General Hospital consolidated into Maine Health, I remember asking the question at the time going, you know, is this really necessary? There are small hospitals that are still successful in Maine, but it just seems like there's a trend of consolidation, and what has happened with that is it's less local input, less local control. And we can't go back and undo that right now. But in terms of questions about the process, my only question would be, I'm a statistics person, so I'd want to know, nowhere have I seen, the numbers they're citing, you know, we need a certain amount of berths to keep the center open. Well, what have they been in the past? What has the staffing been in the past? Because that's the question I want to know, because I can't make an informed decision unless I have that data, is how I feel. So at the moment, I don't have that information, so it's kind of hard to comment about, you know, what I feel they should do. But, you know, that's how I feel about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. August. Mr. Dean, do you want to comment?
The hospital is probably one of the most important things in the city. It's, as I get older, I find it more important to me. So I was very concerned with Denise, and I can't remember her last name, speaking about possibly the losing our childbirthing at Belfast and having mothers have to travel to Penn Bay or another hospital. They explained, you know, that it wouldn't take that long to get there. Well, trust me, being pregnant in labor, traveling 45 minutes, it's a long time, and it's ridiculous. And so in a couple of months, they'll come back explaining what they plan to do in the future. And I am looking forward to having a chance to listen to her in public again, to be able to question the moves they make when they, you know, when they do this. Because we expect, and I expect, a full-service hospital. I want a baby that's, you know, from a lady who's pregnant, born here, instead of traveling long ways to have it happen. We need a full-service hospital. And Belfast, when it comes to Farmington, Portland, and Penn Bay, was very profitable. A lot of local people donated money into that hospital to have it what it is today. And I'd like to see it stay that way. But it's only going to stay that way if the council stays active in asking the tough questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dean. Mr. Harkness?
Thank you. Last November, my wife went to Waldo County General Hospital to get a kidney biopsy. And they got a bad sample. And so they told her once she healed up, that they would have to do a second one, so call back after the holidays to schedule. When she called them in January, they said, we don't do that here anymore. And yet the people from the hospital came to the city council, sat in our chamber, looked us in the face and said, we have not eliminated any services. I asked them about cardiology. They said, we have not eliminated any services. I said, I heard people can't get echocardiograms here anymore. Yeah, we don't do those anymore, but we didn't eliminate any service. This is the most common service cardiac patients get. They said, well, we asked them, did they eliminate hospice? We're hearing from people saying that they can't get hospice care anymore. They said, no, we do hospice all the time. I said, I looked on your website. Mary did the exact same thing independently. Went to their website. Says services. I go down the list of services. It says hospice. I click. What do I get a link to? Sussman House in Rockport. But they'll tell you they haven't eliminated services. And now it's hit a head because of the birthing unit. And I think we're all aware of how important this is. But quite a few of you went to the thing at the high school. And one thing that really struck me there is one of the reasons that Waldo County Hospital has a fairly low rate of births there is because this area is so rich in midwives who birth at home or at their practice, but they can only practice here because the birthing center is there. So if they have an emergency, they can go to the hospital. So they're not only closing the birthing center, but they are also closing down these midwives from doing their business. And we need to do something. And I don't know what that is at this point.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Hike, would you like to comment?
Maine Health is part of a consortium that's called Maine and Company. Jim Bro, CMP, Eaton Peabody, Bangor Savings, all of these companies belong are board members of Main and Company. Profit is the bottom line. I think we have to talk to people like Jan Dodge and Chip Curry and get things done in the legislature to be sure that we're covered, because we are an important voting center here in Belfast. We have given a great deal of money to them. And although the nurses aren't being paid that much, the CEO is getting a record salary, and it's time for some sort of equilibrium to be established between the administration, the profits, and the patients. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Mortier?
Thank you. So when we were, when we had the open to the public and many members of the public came and spoke about the birthing center situation, soon thereafter I reached out to first the chairman of our local board at the hospital, Serena Gatewood, and had a very lengthy and in-depth conversation with her to learn a lot about what was really going on that I maybe wasn't up to date on. I then spoke with the marketing communications director of the hospital for a couple of hours and kind of laid into him. But I found out a lot. They have two problems that are really affecting us in terms of being more informed to be able to react better. Their website is extremely out of date, and the hospice unit is one of the examples. They actually added services to the hospice unit, but nobody knew that, because they didn't make that information available to get in any which way. They've brought in an outside agency that specializes in hospice care that offers far more services than we did before that in our hospice unit. What did change is they took the living room-like waiting room that was outside the hospice bedrooms, and they made it a space next to the ICU for people with temporary needs of physical therapy and rehabilitation that were in transition from spot to spot. So a lot of people tuned into that they thought the unit wasn't there. The bedroom and the whole rest of it is still there. But communication is a big issue that they need to work on. I've also spoken with Denise directly, and I will continue to do that. And we as a council will also keep their feet to the fire as we move forward and as we've been starting to do since this became a subject of interest. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Several of you mentioned, thank you. I've been asked to note that it's Maine Health that is making the decision to change services at Waldo County General Hospital. A number of you have mentioned taxes in the town, property taxes, and we have a number of questions here going deeper into property taxes. I wonder if each of you can comment on how you as a council member would work to ensure that the city has the resources that it needs for our schools and our public services while also managing higher tax burdens on people that perhaps can't afford it, seniors, people on fixed income, or people in lower income brackets. Mr. August, maybe I could start with you.
I was wondering, could we reverse the order at some point? It just seems like keep interest of fairness, let somebody else go
we
first.
We could. I am happy to do that if you would like.
Standing with that, they were going to alternate down on each question.
Okay. I know, but you're doing so well. diving right in there. Okay. Well, why don't we go ahead and, Mr. Dean, why don't I start with you? Yes.
The main thing about our taxes is that they need to be fair. So how do you do that? And after this last round of revaluating the city, there's been a few things that have come to, ahead to me. One is every unit, every property that the city visits, they need a picture of the structure. two corners, so you can see all the way around the structure. And they need a picture of all the outbuildings, all right? Because there are two things on your taxes, land and buildings. Once you have the dimensions, then the numbers start falling in line. You know, another problem that we've had in Belfast is people that are affluent have had some very large houses, and they've come in and bought, and they spent hundreds and hundreds of thousand dollars for these big houses. And then they turn around and they put in granite countertops, heat pumps, anything they want, make it comfortable. Totally understandable. They have the money. Why not? But the problem is that the contractors aren't working under a permit. What's the big deal? The permits go to the accessing department. And that's how people are taxed. If the contractors who come into Belfast don't work under a permit, the assessing will never know that the work was done. And so therefore, it won't show up until they sell their house. And then each and every one of you will have bankrolled them for that period of time. That's unfair. Those are one of the things that I am going to be working at. It needs to be changed. And those are the things that need to be changed. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Harkness, would you like to comment?
Yes, thank you. One thing to start with is that people need to understand that the state constitution of Maine says all tax rates must be the same for every property. We can't tax businesses more. We can't put a different property tax on hotels or, you know, summer homes or anything like that. All have to be the same mill rate for everybody. I know a lot of times people will bring this up is, why can't we tax people from way more? Why can't we tax people who have Airbnbs more? Every property the same. One thing I would like to really emphasize with people is to know what we can already do. Everybody got hit hard in this reval. I shouldn't say everybody. There were people who broke even or went down. Of course, we won't hear from the people who went down. They're not going to come complain. But everybody who is upset about the size of the reval has a very good right to be. But what I would ask them, number one, have you gone to the assessing board to challenge your assessment? If they did not help you or give you any relief, did you file an official appeal of your assessment? These are open to you. They're still open to you right now. You can go to City Hall tomorrow if you think your assessment's too high. Okay? I'm not saying you're going to get the solution you want, but you have that avenue open to you. Have you applied for all exemptions that you're eligible for? A lot of people, it's amazing how many people don't apply for the homestead exemption, the disability exemption, the veterans exemption. If you have a small business, you can apply for what's called a BETI, business equipment tax exemption. And I'd urge everybody, look into that. That's their job in the assessor's office to help you with those. As I said, you may not get the result you want, but don't just assume the assessment you got is the final word.
Thank you very much. Mr. Hike, would you like to comment?
I think the assessor's office has done a terrific job in terms of getting out and about with anyone who requested them to come. I guess my argument is that it's a regressive tax to begin with. The very richest people are paying the same amount as the poorest people. And what is stamp money for somebody with a $2 million house could be the decision between heat or medication for someone on the back Searsport Road with a house worth $150,000. So it's made even worse by people who have the $2 million houses spending 6 months in one day in South Carolina or Florida and avoiding the income tax in Maine. As to the school, I think it would be a fairly simple solution to have class sizes that are mandated by the state, 18 in lower school, 17 in middle school, and 15 in the high school. That way, you get the full benefit of the state's liquid assets, and otherwise, you're penalized for every child short of that quota. It's simple in Portland. It's a little more difficult in Belfast, and it's very difficult in Swanville. But I think it's something that we have to ponder in terms of saving money and making everything equitable. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Mortier?
Yes, thank you. So I mentioned earlier that my husband and I bought property here in 1989. Two revals ago was done in 1990. And as a result of that, the mill rate was 15, and I didn't look it up. I don't remember the decimal point that goes with the 15, but it was 15-ish. And so here we are. Now we're in 2024. We're two revals later, and we're back to a mill rate that's 15.4. It will slowly creep back up. The council has worked hard the last three previous tax years to reduce the mill rate each year. And this year, depending on how you were revaled, there will be benefits to some and not as great of benefits to others. The city tax bill includes the school taxes, tax bill, and the county. I mentioned that when I joined the council, one of the reasons that I ran was because of taxes. And I put a lot of time and effort and work into digging into our taxes line by line and the reviews that we hold with the department heads. We've made a lot of progress over the years, as I mentioned, the last three prior years, reducing the mill rate each year. And the next thing that got my attention was the county taxes and the increases in the county taxes. And so last year, I volunteered to serve on the county budget committee, and I will be doing that again this year. We've already started their budget deliberations for 2025. And I was amazed at the things that I found there, and I'm applying the same efforts there that I have been doing locally in Belfast. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. August.
When it comes to the property taxes, I feel like we basically relied on, we did a revaluation, relied on stale data. We've had homes that haven't been visited in over 30 years. We also, you know, there's a requirement, there's no penalty, but there's a requirement for the state, by the state, for the assessor's office to visit every property every 4 years to at least see the exterior and make a condition assessment of the properties. We've failed on that for a long time. And then, you know, we did a revaluation, and we didn't do what we called proper full revaluation. There was no public process, no public hearings, public information. There wasn't an extensive RFP put out describing what that would look like. There's no what they call a vertical equity analysis done to ensure that we're getting the numbers right when you put in a representative sample to make sure that your low and your high-end homes are valued consistently. So we just did a revaluation, and then the methodology and the process, what it ended up with, and you know, I looked at the last 40 homes that have sold in Belfast, and of the 40, I think the median value was $435,000, the last 40 sales. Of the 20 below that, 13 out of the 20 are now were now valued higher than the sales price, and of the 20 above the median, only one out of 20 was valued above the sales price. So we're still getting it horribly wrong there, and you know that's, you know, I think it's just been ignored for too long, and it's something we need to revisit, and I think we need to do it right. It's not inexpensive to do it right. I think Rockland's paying around $300,000 to do it. That might work out to about $70 per parcel, but someone like me, I'm looking at a $3,600 to $7,100 tax increase, 98% increase. Haven't done anything major to the house. That's just unacceptable to me. Thank you.
Thank you. We have a couple of questions here about a topic that has been coming up everywhere from Bar Harbor to Portland, and that is in relation to the return of the cruise ships to Belfast and the visits that they've been making. And folks would like to know your opinions on the visits of the cruise ships to Belfast. Maybe I could start with Mr. Harkness.
All right, thank you. I think we're lucky in that we have a fairly small harbor, so we don't have to worry about the Queen Mary showing up. I saw the picture of the Queen Mary going by the Rockland breakwater, and the breakwater looked like a smaller than our harbor monument. The cruise ships that come in here, I think it's perfectly acceptable. They aren't particularly obtrusive. They're a good source of revenue for the city because they pay for that docking space and for the clean outs and all that.
I would be very reticent to allow anything bigger or to make accommodations for anything bigger. I don't think we get a lot of benefit from them. I talked one time several years ago to the purser on one of the ships, and he said, and I'm gonna turn 70 in a month or so I can say this. He said, you know, we get to Camden, they go all over the place. We get to Belfast, and they're all old people, and they go, I'm not going to walk up that damn hill. So I don't think the local businesses get a lot from them, but the city does get some revenue. So why not let them have that dock space?
Thank you, Mr. Harkness. Mr. Hike?
Yes, I don't think there's going to be anything larger than what we have coming into the harbor. I don't think the harbor will handle it. I heard a few arguments against it from people when I was getting signatures, that it was damaging views during the regatta and that the buses were blocking views. That was really the only complaint I heard in terms of the Chamber of Commerce people I was talking to, with people spending money. It's very difficult for the people who were on the boats, who tend to be quite old, to spend money further up the hill. So that's why they have the buses. And I don't see it as one of the great pressing problems as it is in Bar Harbor and Rockland and Cataract.
Mr. Thank you, Mr. Ike. Ms. Mortier?
One of the things that I learned back around the first cruise boat came here was back in the early 2000s. And there was one boat that year and made one trip, and then the program grew from there. But one of the things that I learned is that people may not purchase a painting or a knickknack or something as a souvenir when they're here on the boat because they have some size and closet space constraints. However, they very often come back to visit another time, not on a boat, traveling by vehicle, flying in, whatever. And that happens a lot with some of our summer events. People will complain often about the summer events that take place here, that maybe they're not raising the revenue for the businesses directly that day, but people are learning about the city and coming back after that, other times. And I think that that's something that should be considered when we think about the cruise boats. They did increase the length of the visit this year. Prior to COVID, when they came, they would come late one night and leave midday the next day. The people even hardly had a chance to do anything here. But they increased the length of the visits this time to give more opportunity to be exposed to the community. I think the thing that we're going to need to watch is the frequency of visits. They're scheduled out a year or more in advance, and we can be aware of that, and the length of each visit that they're down at the harbor. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. August?
I'll give you two opposing thoughts on this, and one is that you'll never find me on a cruise. I find them, there's nothing appealing about them. But at the same time, this isn't Venice, and we don't have an over-tourism problem. The more you talk to me, the more you'll hear me use the word scale. Scale is something that you know it when you see it. So, you know, putting a 50-unit apartment building in a neighborhood with single-family homes, that's out of scale. But the cruise ships that we're getting here, given where the port is and the length of stay and how many people come off them, I don't see any issue with, you know, anytime soon with us having a problem with that. So it's a non-issue to me. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Dean? Mr. Dean, would you like to comment on the cruise ship?
I would.
Okay.
I actually like the ship coming in. It's not big, like Neil mentions, and it's good for the community. I live a sheltered life, and I find myself speaking with people from away that talk different than I do. They have different ideas. I find them entertaining, and that's not a bad thing. Life would be pretty boring if we were all stuck here like a play. I remember when I was in school, or every 300 years you wake up with the same people. And that's not the case. So the other day I found myself talking with people from away on how to eat lobsters and clams. I explained to them the first thing on a clam is take the skin off, then rinse it out. You take the skin off? I said, yeah, you do. But we had an enjoyable conversation. I was waiting for my lobsters to get done, and it gave me something to do, and I was better for it. And the bottom line is, what I've heard, it's good for local business. They're not taking up packing. That's all. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. We have two questions, one for the incumbents and one for those competing against the incumbents. So I think I'll ask first to the incumbents, what are the accomplishments that you are most proud of that you think that you've contributed to on the City Council that have made Belfast a better place? Ms. Mortier, why don't I start with you?
First would be my attention to detail and homework in terms of evaluating and reviewing and questioning every line of the budget every year for 11, 12 years. And next I would say would be my time on hiring committees for hiring of city staff and department heads especially. And I would say the next one would be the new public works facility, which is no longer brand new. But that was something that was in the works for 10 years before we found the right property and the right planning was put into place for a building that is a 50-year plus building for the community. And the circumstances that that department were working under and the conditions of the building they were working in were worse than any third world country that I used to visit in a prior career. It's a building that's important to our community because public works comes right after public safety in terms of fire and police and ambulance. And they're the ones that do all the other important infrastructure and repair and maintenance work that we all want and enjoy. Thank you.
Mr. Harkness, would you like to comment?
Yes, thank you. I already mentioned WBFY. I'm very proud of having been the catalyst to get that going. But I think even more so, I recall the night that we got the news that we're going to have to shut the city down because of COVID. I like to make a joke that Aaron Herbie got elected or hired as city manager on a Monday and on Friday shut the city down. She doesn't think it's that funny, but I talked to the mayor on the phone that night. And, you know, if you think back, I mean, nobody knew what was going to happen. We're watching on TV. We're watching New York City. They're loading bodies in refrigerator trucks. It was a terrifying time. And what can we do? And I thought to the, you know, this saying about, you know, the Chinese word for crisis and opportunity are the same. And I thought we've got to do something here for this community. And we had a fair amount of money in our, you know, people call it the surplus or the undesignated fund balance. But I said to the mayor, one of the other terms for that is the rainy day fund. And we're in a hurricane. So we, and I modestly say I took the lead on it. The mayor certainly had input. And we came up with the idea of what the mayor named the Keep the Faith Fund. And we ended up, when we put up, the city put some of our money from the surplus into giving $500 grants to local businesses to help them bridge until federal help came. And we bought several $1,000 in $100 gift cards from Hannaford that we distributed to families who had lost their jobs through COVID. Community matched the money, more than matched the money, through a GoFundMe, and we were able to help a lot of people get through that. And we used the same fund that was left over to help the people at McCrum when they lost their jobs and the businesses were hurt by these big storms last winter.
Thank you very much. Mr. Dean?
I was the only member of the Comprehensive Plan Committee that served from the start to the finish. I'd become stubborn at times. It ran from 2001 to 2012, 11 years. I went from a regular floor person actually up to the chair, which was an accomplishment for me. I felt good about that. Now I'm also on the Chamber of Commerce board and involved with programming, so I'm involved a little bit with organizing things that happen in and around Belfast, which is very rewarding. I agree with what Neil mentioned about Keep the Faith Fund. That was very important at the beginning of COVID. For me, it was really important that families in need got a grocery voucher. Groceries are quite expensive. When you don't have much money, you need help. And a lot of people didn't seek it because we're Mainers, you know? But they did, some. And they needed it. They had kids. You know, a mother, you know? So those are the things I feel proud about, you know, that I care about. And one thing I learned on the Comprehensive Plan Committee was to have constructive listening skills. So if you ever want someone to talk to, if you've got a point you'd like to make, my number is in the phone book, and everybody here will say, I don't have a phone book. The number is 338-1920. And if you leave a message and I'm not there, I will call you back, if you make it clear so I can understand it. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Belfast City Council Candidates Forum, held September 30th, 2024, at the Boathouse. This has been the first hour, and the second hour will be presented in just a few moments.